Is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available of this show on these websites and at affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're in Frankfurt, Germany. It's winter. Yes, it is. We're talking to Miriam Courier.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, within a mile, and Malte Staber.
More or less, yes.
More or less, okay. And this is Wade Rathke, more or less. Okay. Malte, Miriam, welcome to Wade's World. Let's talk about, I know y'all are with the Solidarity Group here in Frankfurt. Tell us what that's about, and then tell us about this project you've been doing with some tenants here.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, maybe do you want to start first?
So, thank you for having us here.
Yeah, that's right. And well, no, people know we have good manners. Now let's see if we do good work.
we will see that. So I think here in Frankfurt, or basically to say, is that the housing question or the housing issue, and especially the rights of tenants or the struggle of tenants against the landlords, is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, social issue at the moment. So every election campaign is dominated by that. All the public debates and media debates is about that topic locally at the moment. So, in general, there's a strong gentrification in all over the city. Many lower or middle income people are pushed out from the center to the margins of the city. And a lot of these investments are done in neighborhoods which were formerly neighborhoods of workers, of migrants, of low and middle income people. So that created a lot of social tension, of course, and it created a lot of conflict and different kinds of attempts of organizing of tenants to prevent the worst things to happen in this process, and a lot of attempts of political groups, political parties to organize these kind of struggles. So this is the basic situation we are facing.
And you have some unique situations. I was explaining to you a recent thing we were involved with in British Columbia called rent evictions, where people were basically being evicted in order to supposedly rehab a place, but then have no rights to come back, weren't being given notice at all before they were kicked out. But here, when even your own building where you're living gets renovated, there's an interesting set of things that happen in that situation by law in Germany.
Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the most important technique, let's say, by the landlords to how to get rid of the old tenants and get new ones in who can pay much more rent than the ones before. So the tenants' rights in the German law, there's at least the myth that they are that you as a tenant are quite privileged by the law, which is not true in the end, but at least many people believe so. And the most important laws in that is that as a law for tenant protection, there is a maximum of 15% of rent increase in a time of 3 years. So every 3 years you can raise the rent to a maximum of 15%, and not more than that, which was passed as a law of protection for tenants.
And do usually landlords go the full 15%, or is that discretionary? Or
yes, not like 100%, but it's exceptional that landlords don't.
Everybody
do that.
Flocks to that landlord who only does 5%. I'm sure
yes.
The word gets out among tenants.
That would be great advertisement.
Yeah, yeah. We can help publicize that.
But especially in the last 10 years, where the housing market was so...
They're all going to the cap.
Yes, yeah, so gotcha. Everybody does the maximum as they can. So the only way, because usually contracts for housing or for tenants' contracts, it's forbidden by German law that they are limited in time. So every contract you do as a tenant is unlimited.
Which is very unusual to an American audience on this radio station. They're lucky to have a month-to-month or a one-year lease. But when you say unlimited, as long as they're paying, pretty much, unless they, you know, open up a drug den in the apartment, they're allowed to stay as long as they want.
Exactly. There are some reasons why to kick out somebody.
The drug den being one of them, probably.
For example, would be one. Criminal activities, of course, is a reason to cancel your contract immediately.
And we can even understand that.
That makes sense in a way, maybe. And the second thing is if you don't pay rent for 2 months, or if the amount of rent which is missing being paid by you exceed the amount of the rent of 2 months, this is a reason to be kicked out as well. But a part of that, there's no way how to get rid of your tenants if you want to inside the legal frame. So the most popular technique how to get rid of the tenants is that you can renovate the building which is yours as a landlord. So you have a lot of construction work happening in the building, which usually leads to some people already moving out because they can't stand the construction. As you've experienced here in our house, it's quite it impacts your daily life a lot. So this always leads to some people moving out already. And then the special law about that in Germany is called
Listen to this carefully, because this is amazing to me. Okay.
It's called, or we would maybe translate it as, the modernization law, which means a landlord can modernize its building, which means like
renovate or rehab. Yeah, right. And so in your case, get new elevators or,
for example, the staircase.
Supposedly make it greener. You showed me a lot of places that were being greened up.
Yeah, isolation, like I don't even know how to call it, to isolate the building for keeping the energy supply, the energy.
Yeah, increase insulation, and airspace to keep the heat in. Yeah.
To keep the energy cost lower.
Right.
This is one of the most popular things to modernize in these buildings. So a landlord decides to modernize its building.
And that's a good thing for those long-term tenants, but
usually, because buildings are not in the best shape, it's always a good thing to do, and we would welcome that if there wouldn't be the modernization law, which says that all the costs you have spent as a landlord on renovating your building or modernizing your building, you can put a share of, at the moment, 11%. The law will be changed to 8%, but it doesn't change the logic at all. You can put this share of 11% to your tenants. So
basically, boiling it down in English, the tenant is paying for the modernization of the building.
Correct.
For the landlord.
Exactly. By the law.
If it's 8% over 12 years, that's, you paid 96% of the entire cost. Would you say 11% now? In 9 years, you would have paid 99% of the cost.
In 9 years, so you would have paid the
cost. Is it over then? Once you've paid out the full cost of the bum's modernization, are you finished? Are you square?
That would be already unfair, but logic.
Absolutely,
to do so.
Yeah.
But the law doesn't say how long you can put these 11% increase to your tenants. So it means after 9 years, the tenants have paid 100 or 99% of the costs, but that doesn't mean that the rent is lowered again after the period, but it's you can raise the rent for these 11% forever. So that means the tenant is not even paying the whole cost for the renovation, but even more afterwards.
And the real truth is, we were just keeping the math simple, they're paying 8% on a rising level, or 11% on a rising level of rent, so in 5 years, the rent would have gone up more than 50%, and they still would have been paying 11% or 8% of that new rent.
Uh-huh, exactly.
So the real truth is, way before 10 or 11 years, the landlord will be pocketing every cent that he paid or she paid on renovations.
Exactly.
And that's the law in Germany.
That is the law in Germany, and you can easily see how the power relations in Germany are if housing corporations are that powerful to implement such a law.
So partly the reason they don't have to evict people is if all of a sudden they start modernizing your unit, you know you're about to have to face these costs. So a lot of people who don't think they can afford these increased costs probably hit the road.
Exactly.
Start looking to see they can move out farther or find a cheaper rent. Is that what you're telling people?
Exactly. And this is why it's such a useful technique for landlords to get rid of your old tenants, because it doesn't only mean that you will cover all your your tenants will cover all the costs of your modernization, but it means that the rent is rising so quickly that people cannot afford it anymore to pay. They move out, they're looking for another flat or house which is far away from the center, which is the gentrification process, and you can put people in your newly renovated flat which pays a lot more rent than the ones before. So this is the...
And are they paying that additional surcharge on the... If a new tenant comes in after the modernization, are they also paying this 8 or 11%?
Yes, basically yes in theory, but you can raise the rent. But when a new tenant comes in, you are not bound anymore to the 15% raise within the 3 years. So basically this is the main driving force behind this all this gentrification process.
And we're right now in a building. It's quiet right now because we're actually talking on a Sunday. You know, you're hearing this on another day. But how much of this building, because it's being renovated, has already left?
The building is about 150 units in total. So, and we count at least 40 flats to be empty already, which is not only due to the construction work. People moved out because of the construction work and because they fear the rising rent, but other people moved out just for other different reasons,
sure,
like normal reasons why you change your flat, but the flat is not rented anew for any other new tenant. So it's left empty because they are going to renovate it. So that makes a third of the building already being empty.
That's crazy. We're talking to Malte and Miriam, who are with a solidarity group here in Frankfurt and have been working, among other things, on tenant issues. And we're hearing some crazy, crazy stuff. Miriam, is this typical throughout Germany, these kinds of problems, or is this just a Frankfurt thing we're dealing with?
It's definitely not just a Frankfurt phenomenon, I wouldn't say. You can see that all over Germany, specifically Berlin, which is the capital city of Germany, which was formerly always known as a place where there were low rents, a lot of
artists and cultural people and all those.
You have the stories.
Yeah, no, people would say, oh, we're leaving New York, we're going to Berlin. I mean, if you read the New York Times, nobody really knew. But, you know, folks are going to get a plane for, yeah.
Exactly. So you can see in that example from Berlin specifically, that was just within the last 10 years, the rents increased to such a high level that it's basically everywhere in every big city within Germany, the same gentrification process, the same things that Malte just described happening all over the city.
Because this is a federal law that Malte just described, so the same burn would be running everywhere. So, wow. And how long have y'all been working here? You did win some things from the construction supervisor at the city of Frankfurt just about the construction of this particular property, right?
Yeah, we started, I think it's almost 2 years ago. I wasn't here at the very starting point, but shortly after we moved in. So we were experiencing, we organized for a tenants assembly, which regularly met, and then discussing the individual problems we had with the flat, but basically or mainly the problems of the rent increase and of the construction work. And so we won in this 1.5-2 years at least some regulations for the construction work. For example, that there is a so-called silence break, or at least 3 silence breaks at defined hours of the day where the construction has to stop, or at least no noisy constructions could be made. It took a while before they really applied to that rule, but it was set up by the public construction supervision office, let's mm-hmm. say, of the city. So that was a win, for example, we made. And another one is that the rent increase, that it should start in last April, and we managed to win another 8 months before it's now getting
applying.
It's really applying, and people really have to pay the higher rent. So that was something we won in this process, but still the basic problem of the rent increase will come, and the fear which it causes among the people is still something we haven't challenged so far.
Right. But this housing crisis is not unique to Germany. I know y'all have visited, I think Miriam, you were telling me this earlier, Greece and Italy and Spain. And tell us about what you found as you've tried to travel and see other people who are involved in the same kind of activist work.
Yeah, I think we started traveling in 2013, maybe,
okay.
Even a bit earlier. So a bit, some years after the European crisis hit Europe specifically, and after the big square occupations took place, KCM, for example, in Spain, Greece, there was a big movement as well. And
sure.
I think what we discovered, or what we also saw, maybe everybody else on the TV as well, was that the big demonstration and the gathering of people turned into something what we find very interesting and fruitful, in the sense of that they actually turned into processes of self-organization. So they started to not only demonstrate on the street and demand for a better future for themselves and their families, but also to start that at the moment for themselves now and get active themselves in a way that we at least have not seen in Germany or in the German context any
gotcha.
Other time before.
And what kind of things were they organizing? I think you mentioned social, I'm going to call them social centers. I'm not sure that's the correct name, but...
Yeah. So basically, specifically in Italy, but also in Spain, this is a very common concept that existed long before even the European crisis hit. So they have social centers where people can meet up. They had food corporations. So they distributed their food they got. They shared
gotcha.
Everything. They even had kindergartens where they could send
cultural
their kids
events,
to cultural
and, yeah.
events, all that. So they had sort of like an alternative style of living. And for them, specifically in Greece, was at that moment very important to survive. This was basically the fundamentals of surviving.
And many of these centers continue to be operating at full tilt, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, could you...
Many of these centers are still in operation.
Yeah, they're still in operation, they're still going. I think there was a bit of decrease, specifically in Greece you could see that, but in Spain, for example, Barcelona, you can see that there's a, maybe in connection with the independent movement, a lot of people got engaged and politicized through that, and they started to have a fighting arm, in the sense of that they started to...
Right.
prevent evictions. La Paz, for example, is a very big example of how they tried to do that, gathering people together and not getting kicked out of their houses, because that was a very big thing when crisis hit, because they couldn't pay their loans back to the banks.
Exactly. A lot of people were foreclosed. We're talking to Malte and Miriam here in Frankfurt with the Solidarity Group, and these tenant issues are everywhere in Europe now, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, I think it's one of the biggest issues. It differs still from country to country, which is the biggest problem. And as you have mentioned, Greece and Spain are some examples of where the crisis, the financial crisis, hit the most or the hardest for the normal people, and which created a huge mobilization in protests against, which brought in the end left government into office in Greece on a national level and Spain on a local level. And which caused what Miriam described, a huge wave of self-organization of the people. And it was always depending on what the most pressing problem was in that countries. For example, in Greece, there was a third of all the Greek population was kicked out of the public health insurance system, which before
right.
everybody was part of. So for the U.S. context, this is somehow different.
We're still getting, we're still working
yes.
our way to have something that we can lose. Yeah,
yes.
but they actually had something
they
lost it.
And
yeah.
they lost it in huge numbers. So that means 3, 4, 5 million people were kicked out from one day to another
right.
out of the social security system. So they started self-organizing around these issues. And this was how in Greece, for example, they created a way of, it was called solidarity clinics, so
right,
that was places
mm-hmm.
that had been squatted or rented by some association. Some doctors, nurses came there working for free voluntarily out of the neighborhood for the people in the neighborhood which had lost their social security and health security. And so that was one example for it. In Spain, that was a different, it got to a different topic because it was a different problem, which was the one of forced evictions, and so they organized all around this eviction problem and trying to prevent evictions or trying to squat new flats and places to live for people who had been evicted before in a very successful way. So, but that was very inspiring for us to see this, how this self-organization of very usual people who had not been involved in any political business before, and it worked very well for that time.
Yeah, when we talk about the European crisis, are we talking about sort of the same sort of financial meltdown that was triggered by the United States housing crisis 2008-2009, or are we talking about something different?
It actually started with the U.S. crisis of 2008.
I didn't want to lose the fact that we could be responsible for people who never had insurance now losing insurance, just like, you know, so this was sort of all the dominoes falling in the global neoliberalism financial system that we're still dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Greece was one of the first moments where it is described as some sort of laboratory for austerity politics, in that sense, where they try to basically cut down on any welfare at state, mal to describe, with the healthcare system,
reduce,
but also
everyone's pensions. I mean, it just goes on and on, right?
Pension unemployment rate with the use on up to 60% and all that. So yeah, I would definitely say this was the starting point.
The story on Germany, though, is that Germany has the best economy in all of Europe. So, is that true? I mean, is this sort of part of this whole crisis, or is all the good times here in Germany?
The best is, it depends on how you understand it, but it's definitely the strongest in numbers, in numbers of how much wealth is produced by that economy. And the German government, because of that fact that Germany has the strongest economy here, Germany has the most power inside the EU as a political unit. And when the financial crisis hit and a lot of banks went bankrupt were bailed out by the state, mm-hmm. Germany managed very, very well with this huge power they have inside the EU to let the effects hit other countries than Germany. So at that time, in 2008, 9, 10, 11, when we saw many southern Europe countries really going
Italy, down Greece,
incredibly,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Germany stayed all the same. So there was no social cuts in Germany for that reason. There was no wage cut with the big corporations, or there was no. It was really hard to explain to people that this crisis is real and people are suffering from, people dying from that in Greece, or people getting homeless in Spain because of that, and because of German politics and how to deal out where the consequences hit and where not. And Germany managed in that sense quite well to not let it hit to Germany.
I can still remember in 2008 we were organizing against foreclosures in places like Oakland, and Deutsche Bank was the one that was their sign saying they were foreclosing. And we would negotiate with Deutsche Bank, which is obviously a German-based bank, and they would claim, no, we're just a servicing agent. It's not really our paper, whatever. So, you know, the long arm of justice, recently they had to pay more than $500 million for, you know, basically selling junk, you know, in terms of these things. But Deutsche Bank was right in the middle of all the foreclosure subprime crisis in the U.S., for sure. But they were fine, huh?
I mean, they're still struggling. I think within...
Well, there's good news there.
Yeah, at least.
Sorry to be the one in... You know, here we are. Let's trash some bankers, okay, Malte? Miriam, because, you know...
We're in Frankfurt. We're in the right place to do that.
Which is the financial capital of Europe. Yeah. About to be, of all of Europe, as soon as London goes down on Brexit, but definitely of Germany, for sure. Huh? But that doesn't trickle down either, does it?
No, not at all. Of course not. But yeah. I think what was many banks were bailed out by the German state as well. So there was a lot of public money put into the private sector for rescuing, as they said. But they managed very well to, on the one hand, not let hit the economic consequences too hard on German people, which meant, for example, for the last years, there was no real increase in wages. So it means there was an increase according to inflation, but there's no real win for wages, for example, which was an agreement, let's say, between the German government and the German labor unions or the huge organization of labor unions to say, if we don't want to the crisis to hit in Germany, we have to agree on that, that there will be no wage increases for the next 5 years or whatever. And the labor unions played that game with the German government. So it worked out in that sense. But the consequences then hit other people even more harder.
And for all the huge demonstrations we've seen in recent years in Italy and Greece and Spain, whatever, we have not really seen that in Germany, have we, in terms of reaction to this crisis?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, I can still remember because we were part of big mobilizations in 2015 and 16, where we basically tried to combine this critique. Malte just described that Germany is basically one of the
responsible parties.
Exactly, but it is some sort of, it was some sort of artificial moment in the sense of that we only gathered around the activists that had and shared that knowledge already,
right,
and not just the normal people. But there was, of course, there is. You can see a decrease of the wages. You can see within labor there are different forms that are not so strong anymore than it used to be in terms of getting paid when you are sick,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. So you can see small things that are changing even in Germany in this moment.
Now, does Germany face the same distribution problem we're seeing in the U.S. and so many countries, where there's been an amalgamation of money to a very small number of rich people and wage stagnation, or, you know, a separation in what equitable wealth might be? Is that a situation here in Germany, or are you have a fairer system?
The wealth distribution gap, if you want to say so, is in Germany the biggest inside the EU. So
Well, we in America, we almost lead the world.
Yes.
We're number one, and, you know, next to, I don't know, some, I don't even want to think about the countries that are competing with it. But, so you're the worst in the EU, and we
at
get globally bad. Okay.
So this made a lot of, it's quite obvious because many huge, like, worldwide acting corporations are in Germany. There are many people who earn hell of money with that. And there's a lot, as Miriam said, the labor conditions in the last 10 years changed a lot as well, but not like from one day to another, as it was in Greece or in Spain, which then caused the huge mobilizations and protests against that, but it was done step by step or in a very indirect way.
Gradual.
As people would never read it as a consequence of the crisis. And in the end, if you, coming back to the housing problem here, the housing problem as it's right now is a consequence of the financial crisis as well. So, because at that times, many corporations, many banks, many other investors had to put their money somewhere else because the usual economy or industry in which they were investing did not produce any profit anymore for that years. So they all put it into the housing sector and the real estate sector. So that caused a lot of pressure on the housing market as well to gain more and more profit from, because all these investors put their money in. So in the end, this is a consequence of the financial crisis as well, but it would be never wrapped by the people as that, because it was such indirect and not from one day to another.
But clearly, your solidarity group and others, you're in touch with others around Germany, there's a lot of discussion about this, and the word must be getting out slowly but surely. Is that true? Or is that what I hope? Or we're telling people on the radio right now, anyway.
I mean, coming back to your initial question, why we formed that is, we formed that solidarity groups because of the fact that we think that a lot of people are in very big problems because they fear to lose their houses and their rent and their flats because of the increasing of modernization
and
renovation and
go.
The increases of rents, and they have no place to go. They have to move far out of the city, like Malte described. So what we basically thought was, being inspired by all this European cities and self-organization processes that we saw, we wanted to some sort of contribute and directly help, support, and advise people on their issues. Because yes, in Germany, the rights of renters are maybe high, but most of the people, specifically low-income people, they don't even know they have any rights
exactly.
at all to that thing.
And so if people want to ask either you, Miriam, or Malte, or your solidarity group for more information or advice about this situation, is there any way to get in touch with you if they have more questions and have heard about this now?
We wish there would be more options to get in touch with us, but as far as these solidarity groups are very locally based, very
sure.
small entities, there's no huge Facebook or the internet presence about that. But you could easily get to many different debates and articles and discussions about that, which are around all the left media in Germany. In a way, you find solidarity groups, which are always called by their city's name, and then
So if you went Frankfurt Solidarity Group, you might be able to find y'all?
You would not, because it's so locally based that it has always the names of the neighborhoods.
Oh,
and
okay.
then the solidarity.
So Rödelheim?
Rödelheim would
See?
Be one option.
I'm not learning too much German, but I can spell that at least. This has been Wage World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Brasky from Wage World.
This program is produced by WAMF 90.3 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, and distributed by Affiliated Media Foundation Movement, AMFM, a grassroots effort to produce public radio news and information serving the needs of low and moderate income working Americans by providing a platform for voices not commonly heard in mainstream media. For more information, please visit our website at affiliatedmediamovement.org.